Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Nareit's REIT Report podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Bork from Quito, and today we're taking an inside look at the luxury hotel segment with Richard Stockton, President and CEO of Braemar Hotels and Resorts. Richard, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Sarah. Good to speak to you again.
So, Richard, for those who aren't familiar with Braemar, could you begin by describing the origins of the company and the specific market segment that you're focusing on?
Sure. I'll say that Braemar really started in its current form when we elected to change the strategy of what was previously called Ashford Hospitality Prime in January of 2017. And with that new strategy, we decided to focus exclusively on investment in the luxury hotel segment. And we made some other changes as well at the time, including increasing the dividend for the company, outlining a very clear leverage strategy, and you know, some other things, including a name change, that ultimately characterized the company as to what it is today. And so we started focusing on luxury hotel investment, and as part of that, we defined four of our assets as non-core, and that was out of only 11 assets, and concluded we were either going to sell or reposition them. We ended up ultimately selling two and are in the process of upbranding the other two. And then we used the proceeds from the sale of the two assets along with some additional capital to acquire four new luxury assets in the last 2 years. That's what I would – and where we are today, we're with a portfolio that represents where we want to be in terms of its composition and are, I think, well poised to benefit from the strength of the luxury segment going forward.
So last year, in addition to being busy realigning your portfolio, you also had some significant weather-related challenges. Has most of the work relating to those issues been done at this time?
We did. We had ultimately four assets somehow impacted by weather-related challenges. In Northern California, in Napa Valley, at the end of 2017, there were wildfires that impacted the business within Napa Valley, and we have two hotels there, the Bardessono and Hotel Yountville, but we didn't have any direct exposure or no direct property loss, but there was a short-term business interruption, and we were able to recover insurance proceeds for that. And then in the Caribbean, we had two assets that were exposed to Hurricane Irma, the Ritz-Carlton in St. Thomas and the Pier House in Key West. Within about 6 weeks, there was some damage, but within about 6 weeks, the Pier House was fully repaired and back online. The Ritz-Carlton St. Thomas suffered much more severe damage. And so that hotel has been under renovation now for over a year. And we're making incredibly good progress on a complete redesign and rebuild of all 180 guest rooms. We're adding an additional family pool. We are rebuilding and renovating the restaurants as well as expanding the meeting space. That hotel will come back online in October of this year, and it will be like it'll be like walking into a new hotel. And we have a very favorable insurance policy with low deductibles and extensive coverage that have enabled us to reinstate that property to a brand new condition without the expenditure normally associated with such a renovation, but also without the business disruption that we would normally see, because we are also covered by business interruption insurance during the period of renovation. So in the end, while the hurricane itself was a tremendous tragedy in many ways for the U.S. Virgin Islands and British Virgin Islands, financially for our shareholders, they've been insulated from any loss. And in fact, are going to come out with a brand new hotel at very limited expenditure on behalf of shareholders. So we're looking forward to that grand opening at the end of the year and would encourage people to get down to St. Thomas to experience it.
And in addition to that renovation work, what are some of the other key agenda items you're looking at this year?
Well, as I'd mentioned earlier, we have two of our assets that were deemed non-core, and that was the Courtyard in Philadelphia and the Courtyard in San Francisco, where we decided rather than to sell them because they were in key markets and great locations and really had great bones, as they say, we decided to renovate, upbrand, and reposition those assets in both cases as an Autograph by Marriott. So they continue to be managed by Marriott, albeit under a different brand, and we are completing that conversion work this year. So on June 30th, we'll see the Philadelphia property reopen as an Autograph Philadelphia. I say reopen even though it will stay open through the renovation, but it will have a grand opening as a new brand at that time. And then by the end of the year, we'll have the Autograph in San Francisco come online. And you know, these will be really fantastic properties and in line with the Autograph theme, which is more of a lifestyle brand, more focus on food and beverage. You'll see the design of the rooms become, you know, more contemporary, and I think it'll be something that, you know, our guests will react very positively towards.
Now, earlier this year, Braemar acquired the Ritz-Carlton Lake Tahoe by utilizing its enhanced return funding program with Ashford. What are some of the benefits of that program, and do you expect to tap it again in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. In conjunction with that acquisition, we did negotiate a $50 million enhanced return funding program with Ashford. And essentially what that program provides is for 10% of the purchase price of any new acquisitions, Ashford Inc. Will make this funding contribution. And it's a funding contribution really in exchange for nothing. It's a way for Ashford Inc. Through that relationship to encourage further growth at very competitive prices and accretive terms for Braemar shareholders, and without any incremental fees or anything else, or without an incremental return that you would typically associate with, say, a joint venture partner of some type. So it really is, you know, in some ways free money that is great for Braemar. It helps us grow the platform, you know, very competitively. While at the same time, it's a win-win because the Ashford Inc. Shareholders are going to benefit now through having a larger REIT to which it's providing advisory services, which will ultimately get reflected in advisory asset management fees to the REIT. So we're very excited about this program. We've utilized $10 million out of 50 so far. We do expect going forward that our new acquisitions will also benefit from this program. So really now it's up to us to identify the acquisition opportunities. And we know we've already got 10% of the acquisition price spoken for in Ashford. So it's a very exciting and very creative program.
Great. And then looking more broadly, how would you characterize investment transaction activity and liquidity across the luxury resort sector?
Yeah, we've seen the activity pick up in luxury resorts really over the last little over 2 years now. And, you know, that did in some ways seem to coincide with our pivot to focus on luxury. Just ourselves, we've acquired four luxury hotels in the last 2 years. But we've also seen some other major buyers, both private equity funds, but also our fellow REITs move into the luxury space. And, you know, that has put some pressure on pricing. And I say pressure from the buyer's perspective, meaning that pricing has gotten richer. And therefore, it's been a little bit more difficult for us to find deals that make sense financially. So we're finding ourselves sifting through more deals than we've had to do so in the past to meet our return criteria. And you know, it does feel like because seller expectations have gotten so high that the transaction activity is somewhat slower than it was, say, last year. The debt markets continue to be very constructive. There is ample equity capital around, particularly as raised by the private equity sector. But the meeting of the minds between buyers and sellers, particularly in luxury resorts, feels like just slightly down, although, from a very elevated level. So I'd expect there to be a fair number of luxury resort deals still to be done, this year.
And are you seeing specifically any change in terms of foreign interest in the sector?
Yeah, foreign interest still seems to be few and far between. There was obviously record levels of investment from Asia and the Middle East over the last several years, starting in 2016, really. The Asia money started to pull back. And in fact, you're seeing many of the Chinese investors that bought at that time now explore a sale of their properties. Middle East, likewise. But that said, we are seeing a little bit of interest now from Europeans in the U.S. They are, I think, yet to move en masse. But I wouldn't be surprised if there were some deals done from European money sources over this year, because they're definitely looking at a yield profile on U.S. hotel investments, which is certainly in excess of what they're able to achieve in their own backyard. So that would be the thing that I would look out for this year. But in terms of really the price setting, it really is now the private equity funds in the U.S. and the lodging REITs who I think are establishing pricing, in addition to perhaps private capital sources that are U.S.-based, including high-net-worth individuals.
Now, turning to guest preferences, you operate at the top of the market. So what sorts of developments are you watching across the industry?
Yeah, I think there's really two trends you see in luxury that people are spending a lot of time thinking about, and that is within the luxury segment, how can we continue to challenge ourselves in terms of offering the best possible service to guests? And, service is certainly the way that luxury differentiates itself from the other chain scale segments. But I think the other thing that's important, and it will be important for owners of luxury resorts to stay in front of, is the implementation of new technologies, which in and of themselves deliver a service. And I think technology can be a way for lower-rated hotels to roll out incremental services that provide for an enhanced guest experience at relatively limited cost. And to be more specific on that, and something you probably have seen, when you walk into a guest room today and you turn on your television, you maybe have the option now to stream from your own services. And you can log into your Netflix account, your Hulu account, and the like. I think something like that is almost a necessity now for hotels, certainly at the luxury end, but it's something that can be implemented very cheaply and easily down the line. And so the luxury segment needs to continue to challenge itself in terms of providing technology solutions and personalization and customization, to a greater extent than, say, you would find in your typical upper-upscale and upscale hotel. And so that's the thing that's exciting for me to watch. And I think there will continue to be changes. Every time a guest room is renovated, you're seeing, obviously, new kind of outlets and plugins for devices. You're seeing streaming opportunities, your enhanced Wi-Fi. All these things are what people expect, but it's also a way to deliver more service, albeit through technology. So that's an interesting development that's going to continue to evolve for us.
Now, we talked earlier about the Ritz-Carlton Lake Tahoe, and I wanted to just finish up by asking you about the selection process when it comes to acquisitions. What do you have to see in a property before it makes it to your shortlist?
Yeah, well, the first thing we do in order to understand where we should spend our time and our resources is come up with a target list of markets that are most interesting to us. And we do that by looking at the market size in terms of, you know, what is the number of luxury hotel rooms within a particular market. But we also then look at the fundamentals of that market, including RevPAR growth, including employment statistics, including union versus non-union, et cetera. And then we also look at how pricing is evolving in that market. Is it more affordable or not than other markets? And the combination of those things for us determines what we call our desirability index. And we're able to then, you know, rank the markets, and we do this, you know, once a quarter, in order to really understand, you know, where should we be looking, where should we be, you know, turning over more stones and having more conversations and looking for opportunities. So right now, those markets include, for us, Miami, Chicago, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., as well as the mountain resorts. And so when the Ritz-Carlton Lake Tahoe came along for us, which is a mountain resort, you know, we started to evaluate the return potential. You know, we do a detailed underwriting on each hotel, which is the full 5-year hotel profit and loss projection. And we really look as our key metric to our unlevered IRR expectation for the hotel over that 5-year period. And the last 4 acquisitions we've done, we've had an expectation of an unlevered IRR of 10% or greater. And so there are a lot of things that go into that projection, and they're all important, and they include what is the RevPAR growth of that market projected to be, and which is a function of supply and demand. So clearly we'll look at the competition, we'll look at supply, we'll look at a property's competitive indexing, the RPI, or what is their market share versus their competitors. And then we'll do a detailed analysis on their margins. And, you know, do we believe the hotel is operating at the right expense ratios, or are there areas where we believe costs can be improved to potentially improve that margin? But then we'll also look at it from the other perspective. If a property has had a particularly great year through some sort of exogenous impact, whether it be you know, great snowfall maybe 1 year in the case of a mountain resort, which we don't expect going forward, we'll also make adjustments downward to account for that. So it's a fairly comprehensive review. We tend to find that when we're bringing a property on board, we can bring them into our insurance program that will result in cost savings for the property, which helps us be competitive on pricing. We'll do a detailed assessment of property taxes and how they're likely to evolve, and as a new assessment is usually coming soon after any acquisition. And then that will drive the bottom line, and that's the basis on which we price our acquisitions. You know, we tend to leverage our deals at the property level, but we're not driven by leveraged returns. We're not a private equity fund type investor that's going to seek to apply the most possible leverage in order to drive the highest equity IRR. We really are looking to the unlevered returns, because our leverage structure will change over time. And we may leverage at the property level this time. We may do a loan pool of some type or CMBS deal next time. And then who knows, at some point we may be borrowing unsecured, although that's not our current strategy. So, you know, we like to think that we apply a lot of financial discipline to our acquisitions, that we do a lot of detailed underwriting. And, you know, hopefully that results in ultimately the best returns for our shareholders, which is really at the end of the day the thing that we're promising to deliver. So that's a quick overview of the process, and yeah, something that we feel very kind of strongly about, that is the best in the business.
Okay, great. Richard, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
No, I appreciate you having me on, Sarah, and look forward, of course, to speaking to you, you know, hopefully again really soon.
And to our listeners, be sure to visit REIT.com to find previous episodes of the REIT Report.